Blog Talk Radio.
Peace and blessings. Assalamu alaikum. Shalawan. Welcome, family. Thank you for joining us today on the Black First, Liberation Network. And today our topic is our faith in humanity is our weapon. Don't be afraid to use it. But before I open the lines up and before I get into the topic today, I want to go ahead and replay that song so it can really, really sink in. Because in order for you to understand your faith, you got to know who you are. You got to know your connection to the Creator. You got to know the connection to your people. You got to know your connection to the earth, to the atmosphere. You got to know this. And this, these things is part of what was taken from you in the beginning. Your humanity, and humanity is our weapon. But do you have the proper faith? And we're going to get to the different levels of faith that we're talking about. And is your humanity light? Is that turned on? Because a lot of things that go on right in front your face, right in front my face, our face, if our humanity light is turned on, we will not allow that foolishness to happen. Are you ready to say, here am I, send me? Are you ready to do your part? Well, even if you don't know what your part is, before the end of this program is, you're going to have a very good understanding of what we're talking about when we're dealing with faith, humanity, and it being our weapon, and you have to use it. So let's play the song one more time, and then we're going to get into this.
Yeah.
away my pain and all the chains, 'cause I'm no slave, yeah, for I am king, for all I am, my ancestors tell me so, my blood, it tells me so. My being tells me so. For all I am, for all I am, my ancestors tell me so. My blood, it tells me so. My being, it tells me so.
All right, we are back. So, getting into the topic, our faith in our humanity is our weapon, and don't be afraid to use it. They say faith is the substance hoped for, evidence unseen, right? Now, mind you, most of the time we get this understanding of faith, we get it from the religious context, and that is how we develop our understanding. But tonight I want you to look at it on more than just a religious context, because before you can have faith in the unseen, you got to have faith in what you can see. So when you look in the mirror and looking at yourself, do you have faith in you that you can bring to fruition what you desire? Do you have faith in you? Most, if any of y'all that's listening, follow our YouTube channel, and you see a video that we did yesterday. And it showed a black woman, two black women in Walmart getting beat by the police. And there were at least three brothers, black men, standing around and did nothing. Did absolute nothing but watch. You know, they did say, well, I guess this would make it that they did do something. They said something. They said, if you didn't have that badge on, you know, then I would do something to you. But a little pin, piece of metal, stopped them from doing anything of value, of substance, to help two black women that's getting destroyed by the cracker. Now, one of the sisters said, oh, and she was real calm in the beginning. And she said it right up. Oh, yeah, I know how y'all are. The police already beat me up once. Y'all already beat me up once. We have to change that reality. But if you don't have faith in yourself, you'll never be able to change that reality. You'll never be able to change the reality within your four walls. Because you don't have faith in yourself. So you can't have faith in anything else. So everything always starts with self first. And then it goes outside. if our brothers that were there had faith in themselves, if they knew who they were, they'd have jumped in there and they'd have handled that business, because that's your responsibility. That's your duty. But because you don't have that bare minimum faith of faith in yourself to overcome all obstacles, to achieve your objective, to meet the demand of the time, because you don't have that, then you ain't going to act. A lot of our people suffer from the fiddler syndrome. And this is something that we got to understand, so you can point it out and you can help them overcome the fiddler syndrome. Because all of us, we had it. We had the fiddler syndrome until knowledge came to us, and we had faith in that knowledge. But prior to that, we all had the fiddler syndrome. Let me run it down to you. If you go back and think on the movie Roots, when Kunta Kinte was brought back to the plantation and told, and Fiddler was in charge of it, was supposed to break him in and make him a good slave. And one day Fiddler was bringing the food in and he was happy. He was going to go in there and talk with the African. But Kunta had broke his chains. He broke his chains. When Fiddler saw that the chains was broken, he got upset, angry. He was angry at Kunta. He said, look, man, you're going to mess me up. I had it good. Now, Master going to take away my little things that I had. I got to go back sleeping on the floor. You done broke loose. And Kunta say, Fiddler, we ain't meant to be slaves, Fiddler. We got to be free. We got to be free, Fiddler. Fiddler said, I don't know nothing about no freedom. Guinea man, I don't know nothing about this freedom you talking about. See, Fiddler only knew one reality. He was born in chains. He was born a slave. Kunta was born free. He wasn't born in slavery. So he knew what freedom was. And because he knew what freedom was, and he knew what he was, his duty was to get out of this slavery and be free. That was his number one duty. See, you walking around, our people walking around in America, they don't know what it's like to be free. They don't know what it's like to live in a world without this false white supremacy everywhere they turn. They don't know what that's like. They have no clue of what that's like. They don't understand that life is not dictated by the enemy. They never live a life other than that. So when we come to them with, look, you got to be free. We need to separate. We got to do A, B, C, and D. They say, what? What is this nigga talking about? Talking about separation. Nigga, where we going to go? What we going to do? Who gonna take care of us? Where we going to get a job? How we going to eat? Where we going to make money from? See, their mind is like Fiddler. Fiddler didn't say, let me run with you. Because his mind said, where I'm going to go? What I'm going to do? There ain't no other life besides this. I got to serve Master. Now you're going to get me in trouble. Because you done freed yourself Now you gotta run. You gotta run. We gotta run. We gotta build so that our people that still sleep, still not being able to carry the weight of understanding what freedom is, so they can see, oh my God, look at what they're doing. Look at what they did. Steal away. Let me sneak away and go over there. See, when they hear you, they know you right, but they may be afraid to embrace you. They may be afraid to embrace you because you're a real warrior. And the level that you exist on, they're scared to even imagine being able to go to that level. They're scared to even imagine it, let alone do it. I had this brother tell me one day, and we're going to go to the phone lines in a minute, but I had this brother say, he was following my Facebook, and I used to post a lot of times on Facebook. Then he said, yeah, brother, I'm right with you. I'm down with you. How do I join up with you? I said, well, before you do that, brother, go check out my YouTube channel and then come back and let me know whether or not you want to walk with your brother. He went and checked out my YouTube channel. And when he came back, he said, oh, no, brother, you fire, I'm water. I'll just sit and watch you from afar. I'm not walking with you like that. Why? I don't fear the enemy. And when you don't fear the enemy, you say what you want to say. You do what you want to do. Because there's no lock, there's no cap on your mind. I got faith in myself, and I got faith in the Most High, whom I represent. Whom I represent. You represent. We don't represent no cracker God. And a lot of our people are under that yoke of a cracker God. And it keeps them from fulfilling their heart's desire. You know, they like to say that black people are not monolithic. And I always say that's not true. Because at the end of the day, you want freedom, justice, and equality no matter whether you got money or you don't got money. No matter what financial scale you're on, you want these three things. You deserve these three things. But dealing in this cracker world, you can be the richest black man on earth, but that lowly cracker cop pull you over and take every single right that you think you got. And he the lowest of the low. And you so-called wealthy, you so-called rich. But that money ain't helped you in that instance right there. Why? Because that color, that skin that he's in, and the full line of BS that he's been taught, that he's better than you. And they're not better than us. They're really not on any level. They're not better than us. Why is white male suicide growing so fast? Because the reality, the bullshit that they were taught about white being better and you a white man and you this and you that, when they get on the ground, it's a totally different scenario where you have to deal with a black man that ain't afraid of you, that don't think you the hot shit, that won't bow down to you. It's a whole different scenario. When I was in the military, our captain came to us, and it was me and three other black men sitting down at the desk. We, you know, we're just talking. And so the cracker come, pull up a chair and sit down and get in our conversation. So, of course, when he sat down, we stopped talking about what we were talking about. Then he started talking, and he made a joke. And we looked at each other, then looked at him. None of us laughed because it wasn't funny. He got up, pushed his chair, walked away, went and grabbed our sergeant in charge and said, "Hey, I was out there with them, and I told a joke, and they didn't laugh." You know, he had the nerve to come back and tell us, the sergeant, our sergeant in charge, and he was a black man, come back and tell us, "Hey, the commander just talked to me that he made a joke and y'all didn't laugh." And we said, "Yeah, because it wasn't nothing funny." And he said, "Well, next time he make a joke, whether it's funny or not, laugh anyway. Not me. I ain't doing that. Why? Why is it essential that you laugh when the cracker say a joke that's not even funny? Because you boosting his ego. You making him feel like, yeah, I'm the man. That's not our job, to boost his ego. That's not our job, to make him feel like he's a man, he in charge. No. What do you think? You just stop for a minute. What do you think as a black man and a black woman sees that? How does she reflect on that? Do it make her think, yeah, I got me a good man? Or does she say, I got me a controlled nigga? What do your children think? Yeah, that's my daddy. That's the nigga. See, because as long as you enforce this false notion of white supremacy, its byproduct on black people is black inferiority. So you cannot continue to feed their ego and expect things to be okay, things to be all right. It don't work that way. You got a responsibility, and it is not to make the cracker feel good. That's not your responsibility. And if you're doing that, you're committing treason against your own self-interest. We got to be able to begin the process of thinking about these things and making the meaningful change. Making the meaningful change. Because it's your time to rule. But you ain't going to rule if you scared to get off that cracker's plantation. You ain't going to rule if you don't have faith in your own self and your own ability. It's your turn now. We're going to go to the lines, and we're going to see what we all have to say, because this is a very important subject. Our faith and our faith and humanity is our weapon. And don't be afraid to use it. We'll go to the line. Caller 4751, 4751. Your mic is live. Welcome to the program.
Greetings, Brother Maurice. This is Sister Crystal. I'm just listening in. Very timely topic for tonight.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I'm glad you definitely joined. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Not right now. I may later on as the show progresses, but not right now. Just
okay. All right. Well, I'm going to leave your mic open.
Yes.
Whenever you want to jump in,
okay.
Just feel free and jump right in. All right.
Appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. So, faith. The first part of faith is you got to have faith within yourself. But that means that you got to, in order to have faith within yourself, you got to know who you are. That's why we open the program with I am King. I am King. And he talks about his blood telling him who he is. He talks about his ancestors telling him who he is. And you got to understand why that is important. Because our blood does tell us who we are. Our ancestors does tell us who we are. Because it's important to know. See, the cracker wants you not to know who you are. The cracker wants you to believe that you's a nigger and he found you in the jungle with the bone up your nose swinging from a damn tree. But even in you swinging from a damn tree with a bone up on your nose, you ain't even king of the goddamn jungle. Tarzan, oh, that cracker is the king of the jungle. So he don't even allow you to rule the jungle life if you let him dictate to you who you really are. He don't even give you that. He don't give you that. He wanted to strip you of all the knowledge of who you are. That you be an empty slate. And whatever they put on you, whatever they put to you, then that's what you are. That's what's going to stick. So when you start your schooling, they don't start teaching you about the greatness of Mother Africa, the greatness that came from that continent. They don't start teaching you that. They start with Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, telling you the greatness of white. Get you to understand why it's white folks' rightful place to be your authority. See, you got to understand that two people can't rule the same house at the same time. So in order for the white male to rule the black man, can't even resemble a man. Can't even think about being a man. Look at what they're doing in Texas. Texas Republicans want to pass a law. Democrats don't want the law. So they get up and they leave the state. They flee to Washington, D.C. so they don't have a quorum so they can't do the vote. Now, that has been done before. Lawmakers have done that before. And the state put a warrant out for their arrest and have troopers, state troopers, go and pick their ass up and bring them right back. They just did this a few years ago. So this ain't nothing new. This ain't nothing new. But it's a dog and pony show. It's a dog and pony show. Because that's not, by you getting up running to another state or another city, that ain't giving you power. That ain't making you look smart. When at the end of the day, everything comes down to numbers. But in reality, you will do a gimmick like that because you don't want to put in the real work to change the numbers to where the numbers will fit in your reality. So you want to be seen as you doing something that's really good. You put that bullshit over on people that's asleep. You can't put that over on me today. You can't put that over on us today. Because we're wide awake. We understand. You gaming. You gaming. You playing the numbers. It ain't really about changing the realities of people's lives for the good. It ain't really about that. Because if you were, you would put in the work that will get you the proper result. But you don't want to do the work. You don't want to do the work. None of them. They're supposedly there to represent your interest, my interest, our interest. They don't want to do the work. They lose connection with their base. Why? Look at Cynthia McKinney. Now, Cynthia McKinney, when she lost her re-election to Judge Majette, I was there in Atlanta helping her on her campaign. I came from Nashville to Atlanta. Why? Because Ms. Farrakhan said every FOI and MGT within 500 miles of Atlanta goes there and help this sister to win her election. So everybody got mobilized within 500 miles and go straight to Atlanta. And we out there knocking on doors. Election is coming around. You going to go vote for Cynthia McKinney? Do you need a ride? We'll come pick you up. All you got to do is sign up for the ride. We were out there going door to door, getting the thing out, sitting around there, talking to Cynthia. And my thing was like, because me in politics is like my second nature. I study this thing. And so I'm listening to Cynthia, you know, and I'm like, how could you lose connection with your base that anybody, because the fake Jews went and found this black woman, Judge Majette, and said, we want you to run against Cynthia McKinney. And we're going to back you and, you know, such and such and such. And they did. And Cynthia McKinney lost. And they didn't do it. They did it with another brother in Alabama. I forget his name, but they did it with him too. And he lost. And Minister sent us to Alabama and said we got to go out there and knock on doors and get out the vote effort. And he still lost. I think his name was Hastings. Why? Why did they lose? Because they lost connection to their base. Because they're up in Washington now. They're up on the Capitol Hill now. I can go into the White House and see the president. I can go into the Senate and sit with the senators. I can be on the dais. I'm walking around with power now because I got a little lapel pin. And when they see this lapel pin, people move out the way. The doors of Zion open up, and all manna from heaven come running down. And that ain't true. But they all lose connection with their base because they got sucked in now. They get sucked in to the machine. And you like the perks. You like the advantages of being with the in crowd. But the whole time you win with the in crowd, you forget the crowd that sent you there. You forget the little man and woman from your district that sent you there to work on their behalf. not nobody else's. And so Cynthia was able to be defeated because she didn't stay connected to her base. She disapproved of the Iraq war, and that looked good to, you know, people worldwide that she stood up against Bush. But when you stand up against Bush, and I applaud you for that good work, that good deed, but what did you do to connect that to your people back on the block? See, these are, you can't forget these things, because this is how we become compromised, because we didn't maintain our connection with the source that sent us there. Because the reality is, those who sent you there is the real power, not yourself. Not yourself. Because you can't send yourself. They sent you. They empowered you to do their bidding, but you got to the top of the hill and you forgot all about their bidding. You broke faith. You broke faith. You know how it is when a husband cheat on his wife or a wife cheat on the husband. You broke faith. This stuff ain't, look, this is not rocket science. This ain't rocket science. You broke faith. And when you break faith, you should expect what? A fall. A fall. A fall. Every time you break faith, there's a fall. So she broke faith, and then came her fall. Then she had to reconnect, regain faith, and 2 years later, she ran again, and she beat Majet and was back up on Capitol Hill. Now, when I was living in D.C., I would go to Capitol Hill all the time, and I would go into the hearing, and especially if it had anything to do with Africa. And so I was in there, what do they call it, a foreign relations meeting with African ambassadors from different countries. And we got pictures of me with these ambassadors. There's pictures of me in this foreign relations meeting. And, you know, I would tell you that if you're ever in D.C. and these meetings are going on, you better go and go listen in so you can see for yourself, you can hear for yourself what's really being talked about. And you will see who really is a man or who's a nigger. Because when I saw them African ambassadors there, and they dressed real nice, you know, coming, some had their African regalia on, and their women had the Africa regalia on. It looked real good. But when they opened their mouth and started talking, they were talking like niggas. Master, can I get this kind of aid, Master? Can y'all give us this kind of money, Master? And I'm sitting there scratching my head. I'm like, y'all got natural resources. And y'all here begging the cracker? When all you got to do is produce the resources for yourself and take charge. But you don't want to disturb the balance of relationship or the balance of power. You don't want to disturb that because they still niggas. They still on the plantation. They still dealing with the fiddler syndrome. See, even in Africa, the fiddler syndrome is running rampant. It's running rampant. That's why they're not qualified to rule us. They're not. I'm going to say it again. They're not qualified to rule us. They're not. We are the new rulers. We are the new rulers. And we're going to make sure Black First is ruling. We're going to make sure this is the order of the day. Why? Because it's our time now. See, look, if we just step back, Black First, if we just step back, we took a seat back and said, we ain't going to do shit. We're just going to watch. And as the cracker, since they're at a zero birth rate, and time changes and America is no longer a white majority country, then the quote-unquote peoples of quote-unquote color are the majority, and we still sitting back watching, these niggas will get into office and do the same damn thing that the goddamn cracker was doing. Why? Because their mind is still like the cracker. So they are unfit to rule. And that means Colin Powell, any of these so-called elected officials, present, past, they're not qualified to rule us. That's our job. That's our job. And we have to train our children for rulership because they're going to take the mantle that we pass down to them, period, point blank. Do you really think that these quote-unquote Mexicans or Hispanics, and Hispanic is not a race, it is a culture. So you got black and white. But do you really think they're going to come in the office saying, no, I'm going to do what's right for black people? Even if they're black Mexican or Hispanic. You think they're going to put you first? Hell no. You got Hispanics already in Congress. What that nigga name? Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio. They don't put your needs first. They don't give a damn about you. I had a Mexican tell me, or Hispanic, one of the two, tell me a few years ago when I was living in Nashville, why you don't say nothing about the immigrants that come across, why you don't speak positive and say black people should help them? I said, because I don't give a fuck about them. I'm just keeping it 100. I don't care about them. They're not on my mind. But I'm going to go and teach for black people to go carry water for them. They got their own country. Take their ass back to where they belong and get their country right. Instead of being a punk ass running from your own to come to a place where they don't even like you, where they don't even want you. So no, that's not my responsibility. I'm not going to do it. And they were hot. Hell, they were hot one year. We were on the Zoom, on our Tuesday Zoom meeting. And boy, them Hispanics, they didn't like what I put on goddamn Facebook. And they just started bombing coming through the Zoom. And I mean, they just, we had to shut the damn thing down. Because they didn't like what I wrote. I didn't give a damn. It's still the truth. You know, all we did, we shut down and start right back up, right back over. Put a little block on the door so you got to be admitted. Why they didn't like the truth? Because it doesn't fit their interest. I'm a black man. So I got to worry about what fits our interest. Because this is my base. And we cannot afford to lose connection with our base. And the faith that you have. So I have faith in myself, my God-given abilities. I have faith in my Creator who missioned me and brought me stage after stage through ups and through downs. But all of that preparing me for what I got to go and what I got to do. So like the poem say, life ain't been no crystal stairs. Life ain't been no crystal stairs. Ain't been none for me, and it ain't been none for you. Why? Why? Because he knew that the people that you got to challenge, the people that you got to defeat, the so-called giants of industry. See, these are the ones that those who came before us, they didn't want to fight them. They didn't want to challenge them. They wanted to be friends with them. They wanted to be liked by them. They wanted to be loved by them. Dr. King said, I don't want you to be my brother-in-law. I want you to be my brother. They didn't want to challenge the giant. So as the scripture says that they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years until the elders died out. Then the God took the children in to challenge the giant. We are that children. And it's our mission, our responsibility to challenge and to destroy them. That's our job. I ain't coming to look to be your friend. That's the enemy. I'm coming to chop your head off. I'm coming to rule. See, this ain't no game. This ain't no joke. This ain't no pastime. This is real. And you got to know that. You got to be aware of that. Because you're called just as much as I'm called. But you can't shirk, you can't run from your duty. I can't run from my duty. Freeing a people ain't something you're going to get done in 5-10 minutes. This is a protracted battle. And you got a battle on both sides, all sides. But that's why your brother got your front, your other brother got your back, your sister got your right, your other sister got your left. And you're fighting together in unity and motion and purpose. But if one that's in the group don't have faith in yourself, in your mission, in the God, then when the tough gets tough, they're going to crumble under the weight because they didn't have no faith. They didn't understand that it ain't an overnight journey. They didn't understand that you gotta plan and you gotta strategize every step. It ain't no happenstance. You got to be a general. You got to be a God. Just like it takes institutions to destroy institutions, it takes a God to destroy a God. You better listen. So you got to grow into your Godhood. And you got to be comfortable in that. And you got to be able to feel the motion. You got to be able to feel the motion. We were in our regular Friday meeting, and we were reading the Haitian Constitution. And I was saying to our family in the meeting, because we were talking about a point, and they weren't getting the point. And I said, we got to go back to the mindset that they have and connect so that we can get the spirit of the document, the spirit from which they wrote, they thought, they believed. And then get in tune with it so that we can understand the essence from which it comes. And once we understand the essence from which it comes, we'll be in tune, we'll be lockstep, then we'll know the reasons why they wrote what they wrote. And we won't make mistakes because we can see then. And now, you got to get in tune. You know, you got to be in rhythm. You got to be in rhythm of the truth. And as you're growing into your Godhood, you'll feel that rhythm. A lot of things that I may say or do is because I'm in the rhythm when it comes to me. I'm in the rhythm. And I have faith in myself and faith in the Most High that He's guiding me right so I can say what needs to be said and I can do what needs to be done. And I ain't got to worry about what some repercussions going to be. Because we're at peace. When people come to me and I'm listening not just to what they say, but I'm listening and feeling for the motivation behind what they say. And this is what you should be doing as well. Developing. This is how we develop into our godhood. This is how we develop into our godhood. This is real life. This ain't no game. This is real life. And once you understand this and you begin to live this, watch what you produce. You'll be surprised at what you produce because you're dealing now with a new aspect of yourself. You're dealing now with a new reality because the hood, your mind, is being covered with righteousness. And in that righteousness, there is freedom. There is growth. There is momentum. You know, I wondered when I first got started, and I had more women around me than brothers. And this was before I was married, but I had more women around me than I had brothers, and I didn't understand that. Because I'm like, I would think I would have more brothers with me than sisters. But one thing about it is, the sisters get stuff done. The sisters get stuff done. And you need to get stuff done. God sends you everything that you need to get it done. So we have huge plans. Huge plans. To get stuff done. We're going in a direction that's about taking power and securing a new reality, a new future, so you will understand and know what freedom looks like, what freedom feels like. And we ain't asking nobody, we're taking it. I mean, think about the mind. We had grown black men to say, you shouldn't say you taking power because the FBI gonna come visit you. Say what? You want me to change my language because you afraid the FBI may come visit me? I can't be that afraid like you. The FBI can listen to me day in and day out. Ain't going to change nothing. They take power every day. They secure their power every day. See, you are afraid to, like I said, think on the level we exist on. And if you're afraid to think on the level we exist on, you'll never be nothing but a no good nigga. You'll never be free. You'll always be oppressed. Because the cracker made a good nigga out of you. You still dealing with the fiddler syndrome. You still dealing with the fiddler syndrome. And you can't be a man under that weight. You can't be a woman under that weight. You got to be free. You got to be free. And it's something hard for you to even imagine. But it's something that you got to do. Because it is your way out. You're looking for an exodus. This is your accident. But you got to be man and woman enough to accept that. Look here. Some of us, we get on them cracker jobs and we so goddamn obedient. He's so obedient. You get on them cracker jobs. You are so, what's the word? Intuitive? No. Creative. You're thinking of ways, how can I make this job better? How can I make this work better? You do all that for the cracker. And you refine ways and do things different and make them better. 2 years, 1 year, 6 months down the road, the cracker say, you fired. And you're like, huh? Look what I've been so faithful. I come to work on time. I stay after work. I work for free. I don't complain. I develop things to make things work better. I've been so faithful. Yeah, you've been faithful to his vision. You've been faithful to his reality. But they were never faithful to you. They'll never be faithful to you. They don't care about your children. They care about their children. You work 40, 60, 50 years for the cracker, and you got what to show for it? What you got to show for it? See, this is the reality. But if you had a vision, you got a vision, how much time, energy have you put into your vision? Who's supposed to see for you? Who's looking out for you? Look at the condition of the black man and woman. Where's your vision? You ain't got no vision. You ain't got nobody thinking for you, looking for you. Your leaders are blind. Your leaders are bankrupt. Your leaders have no vision. And the proof of it is, look at what your hands have built. Look at what your leadership has built for you. Now, we got people that say, we don't need no leaders. But your condition says otherwise. And they'll hit you with this trick. They'll say, what's the leader of China? Who's the leader of Australia? Who's the leader of this? Who's the leader of that? Now, because you don't know the name of world leaders don't mean that they ain't there, because they're there. But they say these things to you for what? To make you more productive? To make you get ahead? No. No. It's to convince you of a lie and watch you get further and further and further behind. We all need leadership because you got to grow into your role. You need an example. Somebody that you can look to and pattern your way until you're ready, you're able to stand on your own. Then you go do what you got to get done. Humanity. Humanity Well, as Brother Carlson talked about the other day, there's three pieces that you got to have in order to have humanity. That first piece is a connection to community. Second piece is service of your community / love. And three is your satisfaction. All three of these things you got to have that equal humanity. Let's deal with it. Community. Community. Well, your family is your first community. That's your first community. Everything always starts with self first. The greater community. Right? Because community is the cornerstone of what? Of nation. If community fails, if your marriage is failed, then your community failed, then your nation failed. See, everything is built on block by block, block by block, block by block. And this is something that we can never forget because this is the order of things. This is how things happen. And so when you understand that, then you can make sure that you do what? That you're in proper order. That you're in the proper standard. So your service to your community, but your love is what is the vehicle that you ride that service to. So if you love your community, then the service that you give, that you perform, is always going to be A1. You ain't going to half-ass do it. You're going to do it and get it done. Because that is the standard. That is the standard. You know, a lot of people don't even know. You hear them say, what love is. Oh, love is, you know, this tender feeling. Love is the greatest emotion. Love is duty. Love is duty. If there's no duty, there's no love. There's no love. You better look at it and see. Your mama was dutiful to you. She did what she was supposed to do. She loved you. She loved you. Your daddy? Did he do his duty? Ain't no love there. If he ain't do it, ain't no love there. Look, let me tell you, for me, now I did not grow up with my original father. I used to see my father every summer, and he would pick me up and take me to D.C., pick me up from Philadelphia, and take me to D.C. for the summertime. And even when I was there in the summertime, you know, I'd be at my aunt house or this aunt house or a friend house while my dad out there running the street doing what he do. Where's the love for your son? Then after my mama met my brother's daddy, then I ain't seen my dad, period, point blank. Until after my mom was dead, then I saw it. But where was his duty to his only son? It was absent. It was absent. He could have done a million things. But he chose to do something else. There was no duty because there was no love. There was no love. See, when you love what you produce, Can't no woman, can't no cracker judge, can't nobody tell you you ain't going to see your child. Ain't no way in the hell. Ain't no way in hell, but he didn't love me enough. Because he didn't even, look, that wasn't even his issue. Somebody telling him, you ain't going to see your child. Ain't even the issue. The nigga just didn't take time out to do by me what he should have. But he did by my sisters. He did by my sisters. And he always, even to the day, he always regret. Not that I regret, son, that I wasn't there for you. He don't regret that. He regrets that he didn't have another son. That's what he regrets. Ain't that some shit? When you think about it, ain't that some shit? You don't regret not raising your own son. You raised your daughters. You took care of your daughters while you was running the street. You did take care of your daughters. Your son, you ain't had no time for. But you don't regret not having time for him. You regret that you're too old now that you can't have a medal. Where there's no love, there is no duty. There is no duty. You want to know if somebody loves you? Check their duty. And that'll tell you each and every time. Each and every time. And so we got to understand this. Because I don't want you to be caught up in some foolishness and you misunderstand the reality. Hold on. I see our commander is here. Let me go and open his mic up. Peace and blessings, Brother Commander. Your mic is live. Welcome to the program.
Peace and blessings, Brother Captain Maurice. No, sir, I was just calling in, letting you know I was on, but I'm just tuning in. So I'm just getting settled down. So I'm just tuning in. So carry on.
Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm going to leave your mic open so in case you want to jump in, you can.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So in service, your love is a reflection of your service. Your love is a reflection of your commitment, a reflection of your duty. You get in these relationships, man and woman, woman and man, and the man say, I love you, baby, all night long. Nigga, that ain't no damn love. Woman, that ain't no love. Where is the duty when you mad at him or he mad at you? Are y'all dutiful to one another regardless to whom or what? You support him, as they say, 10 toes down, even when you disagree. You support her 10 toes down even when you disagree. Or you stabbing each other in the back. Because in reality, there's hatred there. That's one thing that we really got to work on. Black on black relationships. Black on black love. Because most of you ain't never been in a loving relationship. Because you don't love yourself. How do you keep your duty to yourself? You can only love a person to the degree that you love yourself. So if somebody tell you, baby, I love you more than I love myself, that's a goddamn lie. And they out there, they smoking their cigarettes for smoking their cigarette weed or whatever it is, they don't love themselves and they ain't going to love you. If they don't be true to themselves, if they don't do what's best for themselves, they're going to do what's best for you. Look at their commitments in life. What are they committed to? Are they committed to their children? Are they committed to their children? If he ain't committed to his children, woman, he'll never be committed to you. These things you better be able to read and understand in a quick time. Because you get with these niggas and then you be sorry because you thought you had a man. And you wound up that you ain't had nothing but a damn nigga. Same thing with you, brothers. You think you got your real woman. Find out you ain't got nothing but a nigga. You ain't got nothing but a nigga. And you get frustrated because of no forward progress. Well, you ain't going to, you'll never have forward progress if your mate is a nigga. Not unless you trying to be a nigga. Then y'all be successful being niggas. But like the cracker say, see the cracker, man. The cracker know more about you and more of what you should be than you know about your damn self. Cracker say, yeah, I want me a black activist. I want me a god. I don't want no regular black man. I don't want that nigga. I want me a god. I said, That cracker know what she's looking for. She know what she's looking for. Why? Why you don't know what you're looking for? Why you don't know that you should be looking for a god versus a nigga? Why you don't know that? And if you get a god, do you know what to do with him? Some of you damn women out there don't even know how to take care of your own children. You a hell of a typist. You're a hell of a secretary, a hell of a boss. You do a damn good job serving the cracker. Are you a good mother? Are you a good wife? But you can work that computer. You can work that computer. You can work your mouth. But when the rubber meets the road, what are you really? What are we really, men? When the rubber meets the road, what are we really? Are we really a god? Are we masquerading? Ain't got time for all that bullshit. Because the woman, the black woman, she needs a god. The black man needs the second self of God. And that can only be seen and gotten through a black woman. Too many want to play the game, but don't want to do the work. But doing the work is your salvation. Putting in the work is what's needed to produce the reality. But you want to get caught up in the way of the cracker. The lifestyle of the cracker. And you'll die a nigga. And you'll die a nigga. You can have all the accolades from the cracker world that you want. At the end of the day, ain't going to mean a goddamn thing. Except that you was a good nigga to the cracker. But what were you to yourself? What do you mean to yourself, to your own people, to your family, to your children? What do you mean? See, men, we got a responsibility on earth because we are the vicegerent. We are the replace. We work out in the place of the God, of the Most High. Why do you want to run from your duty? See, your gift that you have, that the God blessed you with to perform a duty, that's a trial for us. Spoil you. Will it make you unfit to serve your suffering people? Your gift is your trial. Kwame Kilpatrick, and I am so thankful for Kwame Kilpatrick, because he said, my talent took me places where my character wasn't ready for me to go. My talent took me places where my character wasn't ready for me to go. Now, when I read that, I was like, wow. That was something. I ain't never forgot it. Reading it one time, it burned in my brain. Because this man's sitting behind jail, behind prison walls. He was the Detroit, the mayor of Detroit. And he's behind prison walls. Not because he stole money. He ripped the city off. Not because of that. He's behind the bars because he lied. He lied. Where if he would have just told the truth, it would look bad. But he wouldn't have been in jail. But he lied to cover up behavior that he shouldn't have done. Character. Character. We got to have good character. Because we're going places because we are talented people. We're a talented group. But if your character ain't worth a damn, you ain't going nowhere but to jail. In my beginning startup, I told Brother Bakari, because as I said, you know, I had a lot of women with me. And I said, brother, don't you ever leave me in a room with a woman, with all these women by myself. You always be there with me. Why did I say that? Because you don't want no room for temptation. Because then I was a single man. I don't want no room for temptation. Because one thing that I did learn is that for whatever reason, when sisters work with me, they fall in love. They do. They fall in love. And they will admit it and want me to express the same, but it ain't like that. And so I was walking around questioning, why does this keep happening to me? And then it came to me, it ain't you. It's the God in you. Because you're working to fulfill an agenda, a mission. And so it speaks to the nature of the woman. It speaks to her nature. And so when it speaks to her nature in the way that it does, it makes her to fall in love. And that love is a protecting love, a nurturing love, a powerful love. And a nigga, a lustful nigga, will take advantage of her love. Then you're in trouble. Then you're in trouble. We got to be upright. We got to be upright. Our character can't be questioned. We got to be right. And it's a process. And you work that process. You work that process. And you'll see yourself growing. And you'll see your character getting strong. And you'll get to a point where it's just like second nature. See, this is why we teach. The purpose of teaching is to make you a better person. It is to make you and me better people. We have to begin to justify our life, to justify our existence on the most high green earth. You think about it. The sun justifies its existence, the trees, the grass. They're all doing what they were made to do. Even the dog, the cat, the rat, the spider, they're justifying its existence. What about you? What about me? Are we justifying our existence? This is what we got to do. The ant is the ant. Can't be the bee, and the bee can't be the ant. But if they do what they're born to do, if they work within their nature, they will produce their purpose. What they will do, they will fulfill their purpose. Are you doing what you're born to do? When we look at our duty, we can't be careless with our duty. Duty is an act or an obligation, a function, a service that is binding. How is your service to yourself? Because if you can't serve yourself, you can't serve your people. Therefore, your humanity is missing. See, when we showed this video that we talked about in the beginning of the program at the Sunday's meeting, and I'm looking and listening at everybody watching it, what am I looking for? Your humanity. Is it turned on? Brother Commander said, bro, how much more of this we got to watch? Because he was ready to go through the goddamn TV. How much more of this do I got to watch? His humanity said, I got to kill these crackers. He don't do this and live. I saw him tell the children, you will never experience that. You will never experience that. You will never experience that. Determination. Humanity is turned on. duty, love, obligation is there at the forefront. If that would have happened and we were there, it wouldn't have went down like that. It wouldn't have went down like that. See, you got to understand in your time of action, that is what is required. Not no foolishness, not no pulling out your phone so you can take a video. Let me tell you who you video people are. Y'all remember the scenes of our brothers and sisters hanging from trees and you had the cracker standing around watching, spectating, looking, smiling? You are the new spectator. That's you today with your phone. You replaced the cracker. You the spectator now. You the onlooker now. When you could have done something to save your brother, to save your sister, but you didn't keep your duty. You didn't keep your duty. You know, I'm currently reading a book called We Will Shoot Back. And I would recommend you and begin to read it. This should be like a Bible, because it's a roadmap. And you got to understand, see, the cracker will not teach you that you put up a fight. He don't want you to know that. He wants you to know, yeah, we came through with our costumes on, scared your ass, and then whooped your ass, then terrified your ass, and you bowed down, every lot of you. But that ain't the case. That ain't the case. See, when I was growing up in Philadelphia, North Philly, and our community was so secured because our grandfather and the other men of the community made it that way. We didn't know nothing about no damn police brutality. We didn't know nothing about that. We didn't even know cops would beat people and all that. We didn't know nothing about that. Our environment was secure. Ain't nobody breaking in nobody's house, robbing nobody. We walked around all day, doors open, walking in people's houses, doing this, doing that, coming on out, running in and out of the door. Ain't no door locked. Ain't no such thing of knocking on the door. Go on in the house. Our community was protected. I would go to the corner store, Briar's, and the brother inside, he would come outside, and, you know, he'd be, hold up his hands and he'd say, come on, punch, punch. You know, so me, I'd be in there punching his hand. You know, he's working it out with me. Even though my dad wasn't there, but there were men doing their part fathering me so that I could go further. They were fathering, and it ain't like my mama came to them and say, hey, you know, I'm a single parent or whatever, help me with my son. No. No. He just took time with me. All of the stores, they took time with us children. There's a genuine love there for us. And as I spoke before that, you know, during the summertime, they would turn on the fire hydrant. You know, one of our uncles or our granddaddy or a neighbor, somebody would turn on the fire hydrant because we ain't had no pool. So they turn on the fire hydrant, then we put on our shorts and we go run in the fire hydrant and pray. And the cars that be coming down the street will stand in front of the hydrant so the car don't get wet and they go on about their business. Or they'll say, you know, get in front of it so it can spray out so my car can get washed, you know, so it can get wet. And we'll do that. But one day we out there just children playing in the fire hydrant. And Mr. Joe, the drunk of the community, came down and he got in the water with us. My grandfather and Mr. Jimmy were sitting outside and they was like, hey, Joe. Hey, Joe, get out of there. Those children playing in there. Now, all of us knew Joe was drunk because Joe is always drunk. But in his drunkenness, he ain't going to mess with you. He ain't going to do nothing to you. He ain't even going to cuss you. He's just going to be his drunk self. But this day, and this was the only day he's ever done it, that he was in the fire hydrant water with us, and he didn't touch none of us. He didn't even talk to none of us. He was just standing there, you know, leaning to the side and whatever, getting wet, cooling off. And they were like, yo, Joe, get out of that water. You see them children there? Get out of that water. Well, Joe was ignoring them. He wasn't getting out the water. So I saw my granddaddy and Mr. Jimmy went and got a water hose and cut it up like a belt and walked over to us, to the fire hydrant where we were playing, and they said, y'all children, move out the way. And all of us moved out the way, stood on the side. They took that water hose and whooped Mr. Joe ass in the goddamn water. They whooped his ass. And I'm standing there like, oh, my God. I ain't never seen this before. What was happening before all of our eyes? Humanity, rulership, governorship, responsibility, obligation was taking place in front of our face. They whooped his ass. He got out of that water. They said, y'all children, get back in the water. We got back in the water. He took his ass in the house. We stayed out there and played. A few weeks later, we were in that water again. Here comes drunk Mr. Joe. He ain't getting that water. He kept on going, went up to his house. He ain't getting that water. Why? Because the men said, this is unacceptable. And because you have violated our law, we going to enforce our law. And they whooped his ass. And he ain't never made that mistake ever again. Ever again. Ever. Humanity. Duty. Obligation. Love. Played out for us right in front of our faces. So we understand the standard. And what must be done as men, this is the standard. I can remember when, you know, we'd be going to the corner store, and because I was the oldest one, it was always my responsibility to make sure everybody be all right and do what they're supposed to get done. And if something went wrong, I knew I had to answer for it, period, point blank. And nobody don't want to hear no excuses. Own it. You broke it, damn it, you own it. Whatever punishment that comes, natural consequence. Natural consequence. I raised my children the exact same way. The exact same way. But us as a community, We have gotten away from that. We've gotten away from that and the destruction in our community is because we have gotten away from what is right. Just as they say, it takes a village to teach a child, to rear a child. It also takes a village to abuse a child, to destroy a child. We got to understand our responsibility. Now, in the book, We Will Shoot Back, they talk about a bad Negro. A bad Negro. And this Saturday on the YouTube, our topic is the international nigger. The international nigger. And I would say definitely you're going to have to check that out. This is going to be a good program. But they dealt with what is called the bad Negro. And so they teach in the We Will Shoot Back and say the bad Negro construct is very important and in black folklore and Southern culture. In white Southern culture, bad Negroes were those who openly defied segregation customs and were not differential to whites, as was expected in white supremacist social etiquette. To white segregationist society, the behavior of bad Negroes was considered uppity, dangerous to the security and social order. Blacks had to be ambivalent responses to the bad Negroes, who were sometimes seen as troublemakers, like you, me, us, we're troublemakers. Because in our time, we would be considered, in their time, the bad Negroes. Because we're not going to conform to the white supremacist social etiquette. We're not going to conform to that. So we would be the bad Negroes. See, not everybody bowed down to the cracker. Not everybody said, yes, sir, Mr. Cracker. Yes, sir, Mr. Cracker. That ain't everybody. And damn it, you better understand that. You got to leave the Motee tribe, sir. You got to leave that tribe and embrace your freedom, your justice, your equality. You have to embrace your natural self. Now, some people, live vicariously through the action of bad Negroes who sometimes behaved and lived as some blacks dreamed and wished they could. And black folk culture, the bad Negro is revered and depicted in a horrific manner. See, that's the same it is today. What I say, some of y'all are afraid to even think on the level that we live on. You're afraid to think on the level we live on. So you want to live vicariously through us. You want us to run and tell you what we got going on. You like to hear the talk. You like to see us walk. But you're scared to make that step yourself. But trust and believe. Because you see us do it. You can do it. You can do it. You got to let go of that fear. So in the context of segregationist ethics, blacks who possess the resources or physical space to avoid being constantly subjected to the humiliation imposed on the majority of black Southerners were considered bad Negroes. So if you had the money and you could live without dealing with white folks, you was a bad Negro. Did you know we're passing laws during World War II time, passing laws to make black women work for the cracker? Can you believe that? And they would come to me and say, I want you to be my maid. And the black woman said, no, I don't need you to, I don't need to be your maid. No, that's not going to happen. I'm not working for you. And to the cracker, it was, this nigga over here, she told me no. She told me no. She ain't going to work for me. Nigga, you need money? What do you mean you going to turn the job down? See, because her husband was in the military, so she was getting money. She didn't need to do no work for you. They would consider her a bad Negro because she had the power to tell a cracker, no, ain't going to happen. I ain't doing it. No, I'm self-sufficient. I'm independent. See, that's a beautiful thing when you can tell a cracker, no. And ain't a damn thing the cracker can do about it. So it upset them mentally, emotionally, and physically. So they ran to the lawmakers and say, we got to pass a law to make these niggas work for us. No. In their minds, there never is a time when a nigga should tell them no. But you got to tell them, I ain't your nigga. No. I told the cracker no when I was in the military. The ambassador gave me Article 15. It told me, you can't tell me no. And they right. You in the military, the commander tell you to do something? Okay, yes, sir, I'm going to get it done. NCO tell you going to do something? Okay, Sarge, I'll get it done. They ain't supposed to say, no, I ain't going to do it. But I said, no, I ain't going to do it. And after they gave me Article 15, I did my extra duty, I still told them no, I ain't going to do it. Why? Because I was a bad Negro? Because I was waking up to who I am and realizing I ain't supposed to be here in the first place. See, I heard Donald Belize Muhammad say, if a gnat or anything smaller took a morsel of bread off the white man's plate, the white man don't have the power to call the gnat back. So what do you look like? Breaking your back to do whatever this cracker tell you to do. And as I was driving into to work that morning, but I was working in the finance battalion, coming home, we did PT, so we was coming back to work in the office. And I'm thinking about that. I got that on the forefront of my mind. That's right. That's right. Park my car, I go into the office. Sergeant Sanders. I can't stand that cracker. But he was there. And he say, he was my NCOIC. He say, my name was Rivers at that time. Rivers, why don't you go over there and move them bleachers? I'm looking like, you got them privates around here. You going to tell me to move some fucking bleachers? I said, no. What do you say? No. I said, if a gnat or anything smaller took a morsel of bread off your plate, you don't have the power to call the gnat back. So, no, you don't move the goddamn bleacher. And the look on his face was of shock. Of shock. He didn't know what the fuck to do. Because here you are in the military talking to him like he ain't shit now. I'm talking like I'm the authority. And he outranked me. He say, I don't know what's wrong with you, but something wrong with you. Why don't you just go home, take the day off, just go home and chill out, come back tomorrow. God, shit. All right. I'll take that. And I took my happy ass home. Came back the next day. And it showed me. Here it is, this nigga got authority over me. But he really don't have authority over me. How is that? Then more locks start coming off my mind to say, this cracker only got authority over me that I give him. That I give him. Here's another day we were on an FTX, and I was in my bunk and my on my cot in the group tent suite, and all the sergeant first class, they were in another tent, I think it was Bravo Company's tent, and they were working out guard duty. And one of them said, give me the guard duty. Oh, just give Rivers the guard duty. And it was like 2 or 3 a.m. the time. And my sergeant first class was like, I'm not telling him that. You tell him that. And he was like, I'm not telling him that. You tell him that. And another one said, I'm not telling him that. You tell. So they kept passing the buck. I slept good the whole night. No duty. I woke up the next morning. Friend of mine come tell me, man, you know, they were scared to give you duty last night. I said, what are you talking about? I slept all night. I had no duty. He was like, yeah, we know. They were in the tent discussing who was going to get watch. And it was at 2 o'clock in the morning that they were talking about giving it to you, but nobody was wanted to come tell you that you had the duty. I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. I was like, really? What did that do? That reinforced in my mind that these crackers ain't got no authority over you except the authority you give them. So that emboldened me to do it even more, to walk harder even more, because now other black soldiers are watching, and they're looking to see, is this nigga going to get away with it? And the more bolder I became, the more it emboldened them to walk what they see. I would have soldiers come up to me, hey, Reese, I ain't eat no pork today. I left that alone. I praise you to Allah. Good job, brother. I'm proud of you, brother. And they would just light up. That's because you said, I'm proud of you, brother. Good job, brother. Because even though they wasn't ready to do what I do, they enjoyed watching it. And it started the process of becoming a bad Negro, a free black man, of God, of God. 1995, when they did the Million Man March, and I was still in the military, I went to my commander and I said, hey, I'm about to go to Million Man March. So you need to let me go and let all my brothers and sisters, if they want to go, they can go. If they don't want to go, then they need to stay home. So I'm coming to Pharaoh and say, let my people go. He said, oh, you can go. And if they don't want to come to work, they ain't got to come to work that day. And I told them, and they were just so happy, so happy. And they watched the Million Man March on TV. When I got back to the base, they was like, man, how was it? We watched it. I couldn't believe it. I said, brother, it was something like I ain't never experienced before in my life. I said, when we got there, it was dark. When we got on the mall, it was dark. They started the prayer, and we were up at the front. I said, when the prayer was over, and I opened my eyes, and it was light out, and I turned around to see how many people were in the back, it was full. I saw people on statues, people on trees. I said, and I was just amazed, because when we got there, it was dark, and we were up at the front, and wasn't nobody pretty much behind us. But time prayer is over, people everywhere. Everywhere. Because they saw the example. They heard the voice of what a black man sounds like. But a black man in you. Your faith and humanity is our weapon. Don't be afraid to use it. Don't be afraid to use it. I thank you, family, for staying with us for this 2 hours. Our time is up. I ask you to share the message as always so that our people will grow and understand. This is our mission. This is our time. We thank everybody for joining us. And we say, as always, you kill the nigga in you, I'm going to kill the nigga in me, and our God will reign supreme. We are Black First. Today, tomorrow, and forever. Love you, family. Peace and blessings. Assalamu alaikum. Shalom.